Okay, so I'm going to get into the fourth step now. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. And do we feel broke? Do we feel broke inside spiritually? Do we feel broke mentally in the way that our thinking processes are working? And physically, are we feeling a little broken? And so our inventory is going to help repair that. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding, searching, and fact-facing, fearless process, right? We're doing a searching and fearless process. And I'm on page 64, by the way. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. That's us. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. Right? So we want to be somewhat detached and factorial, right? We're zooming out to get the big picture. Remember the third step that we just took all last week with our step partners, where we read the full page 25 of our Idiot's Guide, seeing clearly that we are like an actor running the show, arranging the lights and the scenery and the ballet, forever believing that if the show would come off just as we think it should, that everyone would be pleased, including ourselves, right? And so in that same vein, we're going to be taking a seat in the auditorium, right? We want to look at the inventory of our lives and the actors on the stage, us and those in our relationships, from a great distance, right? We're not trying to like relive the resentments, the anger, the fear, and the worry. What we're trying to do is get a somewhat objective perspective, right? And so looking at it from like 30,000 feet, you know, what do we see? What are the roles that we play? What is the way in which we believe others should be acting differently so that we can be okay? And haven't I done so many things to, you know, to try to be okay? In the top paragraph of 64, which we just went over, you know, it tells us very plainly that the third step, you know, our decision, our third step decision was a vital and crucial step, but it only could have, permanent effect unless at once followed by strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. And when I was brought through the work, it was made really evident to me that the purpose of my fourth step was to be rid of the things, you know, in myself, which is blocking me from being the woman that God would have me be. And some of the things that I tried to do to arrange life to suit myself to be okay was something like therapy or self-help books or, you know, working on myself or things like that. Therapy is about managing my life, learning to manage my life. And I'm not trying to learn to manage my defects of character when I do my fourth step in the way the big book describes. It tells us very clearly that we're going to face and be rid of. And so by facing, by doing that fearless and searching and getting unblocked from my delusions, that it actually makes room for God to come in and pluck those out root and branch. And that's how I'm rid of them, right? So if you're feeling anxious or nervous that you're going to be responsible for removing your character defects, you don't worry, you can let that go. That's not what this process is about. We know you can't do that, or you would have by now. This process is about merely working the steps as designed, as written in the book, because we find that when we follow these instructions, that we have the experience of these 100 men and women who have recovered. Those things which once were blocking us are removed. They're removed for us. God is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. If the owner of the business is to be successful, she cannot fool herself about values, right? So I'm looking at, what is the value of holding on to this fear or anger or resentment? There must be some value in it, or I wouldn't still be carrying it around. You know, there's a lot going on in my mind and in my heart, and I, to some degree, I do, you know, pick and choose what to hold on to. when I was brought through the work the first time, but even more so the second time, I could really see how I used my anger to feel powerful, how I used my resentments to keep me from having to be vulnerable or to stand in my truth or to face what was. You know, oftentimes my fears were my truth, and it was silly, you know, for me to be acting as if they weren't. And that was one of the ways in which I was blocked and felt somewhat stuck and frozen in my life. So here I ask myself, honestly, like I really take a look at this stuff, even if it's just in the privacy of my own bedroom between me and God, right? It's like, what is the value in holding on to this? You know, how am I using it to feel powerful? And, you know, why do I need to be powerful? We're going to get into that in the third column. And it makes reference to that here. We have to remember, my spirit's sickened, right? This is why I'm blocked. So we're not, you know, we're not trying to posture ourselves as good people or bad people, you know, or right or wrong. We're really just looking at sick or well. Where is my spirit sickened? Where can it be well, right? I don't need to know the how. I just need to know the where. I have to do that honest, fearless, and searching inventory, that fact-finding and fact-facing process. If the owner of the business is to be successful, she cannot fool herself about values. Okay, we did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifests in various ways, what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. And so for me, some of, you know, my recollections of being that, you know, laying eyes on this paragraph for the first time and being led through it was like, wow, you know, I really started to see how, you know, especially when I filled out column one and two, in column two, where I really want to explain my resentment, I can really begin for the first time just a little bit to see my propensity to have this right versus wrong, you know, justice kind of approach, where I'm the judge and the gavel, right? I'm the determinant of what's right and wrong. And, you know, success in this area is success in the fourth step for me was like seeing that my drive is to get better, you know, to get well, to move from an us versus them mentality to a I can be made whole mentality, regardless of what other people, places, and things are doing or not doing. So I'm just looking, as I go through the work for where my spirit has been sickened. Not so much the emphasis on who, but where. But the paragraph here is telling us if we're not honest about the who that we're, you know, that this issue is with, then we'll never get to the where. So that's why when some people are like, I'm not sure if I have a resentment on this person or that thing, take it to prayer and meditation. If it bothers you, if it makes you uncomfortable, if you have an adverse, you know, change of attitude when it comes into your mind or memory, you know, that could be a sign that this is a resentment that's blocking you. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more overeaters, compulsive eaters, and food addicts than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And here we see the reference to spiritual sickness. This is a really powerful statement to me. You know, do I realize I've been spiritually sick as a result of the mental and physical ways that my disease has manifested? Can I see how it would be impossible for me not to be? When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And there it is. There it is. It tells us very clearly that when the spiritual malady is overcome, when we are unblocked, that our food addiction, our cravings, the mental obsession is lifted. It's lifted by a power greater than ourselves. And we sort out mentally and physically. This has not only been my experience and those of women I've worked with, but it has been the experience of the 100 men and women that wrote this book. This is their story. And it's the, if you've identified throughout step one, then the same is true for you here, right? Because the spiritual malady is the root of it. So this is a promise, and it's also a warning, because the reverse is true. You know, there are people who get abstinent and they're healed, they're spiritually unblocked, they're whole in their soul in many ways. They feel centered in the circle and the triangle. And then they slip away. They slip away from daily 10 and 11. They slip away from the practices that we've gone through in the book, all 12 steps. And, you know, just like anything else, when we don't work the program, you know, it allows that spirit to get sickened again and the malady can return. And so that's why this is both a promise and a warning. You know, my food is the last thing to go. I can see where I'm relapsing spiritually and mentally long before I start acting out with food. And that was something that was made clear to me after a couple years in recovery. And I had relapsed twice. And, you know, when I came to BBA, I was really just spiritually dying inside. And today I can look back and I can see the behaviors, the attitudes, and the actions that were going on long before I began to act out and pick up with food. I can see that my spirit was sickened and it led me to that. So the good news for me was, you know, when I found BBA, it's such a rooted spiritual recovery program that it was, I mean, I just felt really, you know, blessed. I don't know what the right word is, but it was definitely higher powered because it was the only thing that really could have righted me. And I see that clearly now. So for those of you who were oh so curious as to why we don't have food plans or talk about food, it's because the food is but a symptom. And here the book tells us the truth for the many umpth time, but maybe we can really hear it in this wording. You know, it's a promise. You know, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And that's why we do this fourth step. We need to do some housekeeping because our spirit has been sickened. And we're going to go through room by room and unblock, clean out, and get rid of, face and be rid of, the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry, right? So that's column one and column two. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambition, our personal relationships, that includes sexual relationships, were hurt or threatened, right? So that's, were hurt was security or threatened was pride. So we look at self-esteem, pocketbooks, ambition, personal relationships, security, and pride. Those are the sections that make up our third column. That's column three. Or interfered with. I'm sorry. Threatened or interfered with. We consider all that the same thing. So we were sore. We were burned up. I love this language from the 30s and 40s. You know, it's like we were sore. I mean, we just don't hear that very often, but doesn't that really describe how we feel when we feel wronged by another person? It's like we're kind of like we're hurt. We're hurt. We're discontent. We're sore, right? It's like some of us have had situations or relationships where events repeat themselves. You know, some of us have a background with trauma or abuse, and sometimes we can be triggered by those things. And similar to how you know, when we run over, when we brush up against a scab, remember being a child and falling and having a scab on your knee and, you know, some clothing brushes up against it, it's sore, right? There's some sore spots there. We can run tracks over old wounds, right? And so the book knows this about us. And those are some of the things that, you know, scary as it may seem, it's far scarier not to look at these things and not to unpack them in a loving way. How do we know that? Because we see the destruction that it's caused in our lives when we review the Idiot's Guide in step one questions. Those, you know, 9 weeks that we spent writing out all of the ways that not looking at this stuff and not being honest about it, not even having a method to do it with because, well, we didn't have hope. We didn't have an answer. You know, we weren't motivated to do that. We felt like we needed to kind of take care of it ourselves. And if this doesn't apply to you, please disregard. But for many people who have an addiction like food addiction and come to the work, these things do apply. And, you know, we were burned up. We were burned up. We were burned out, you know, trying to manage our lives with these wounds, with these hurts, with these harms, with these angers. And finally here, you know, this book understands us. It gives us a thorough and safe process to unpack this so that we can get to our truth and see that oftentimes our fears are nothing more than our own making, right? That's why the book tells us our problems are of our own making. A lot of our problems come from fears. So we'll learn more about that in inventory. But for now, I want to encourage you to trust the process and to realize that, you know, we're going to look at these multiple areas of ambition, personal relationship, sex relations, security, pride, and, you know, and how we were burned up. And we're going to face and be rid of these things. And I want you to remember that when you're facing it, you know, that it's because you want to be rid of it. That's why you're facing it. Trust the process. On our grudge list, we set, we call that our resentment list. We set opposite each name in our injuries, right? So what that means is we have the name and then we have the injury. So in the old method, they had it columns, up, down columns, right? So vertical columns, left to right. Here in BBA, we developed a handy worksheet where the columns are actually stacked above and below each other, but essentially they're the same. And I sent out a visual aid just to make sure everybody understands column 1, 2, and 3, because I know it can be a little confusing the first time you lay eyes on it. It doesn't look exactly like the book here. And that's because we've found that we have an expanded third and fourth column that is far more effective than anything we've seen. And in order to have that expanded third and fourth column, we just need a little more writing room. So, you know, rather than make it difficult, we keep it simple and we just lay it out in an 8x10 or 8x11.5 format. Okay. Pardon me. We were usually as definite as this example, right? And I wrote a little question mark next to that when I went through the work because I didn't understand what they meant. What does it mean we're usually as definite as the example? What they meant was plain spoken. You know, can I be as plain spoken as this example? Because my story is like 10 minutes long, sometimes longer, about why I have an anger or resentment. And the older the anger or resentment, the longer the story, right? And so we kind of need to sit in prayer and meditation, go deep inside, and separate the wheat from the chaff, and try to be as plain spoken as the example here. Now, I want to talk a little bit about how I noticed that in some of the rooms, people will say my part and their part, right? And this was mentioned early on in our workshop. Someone had brought up the concept of parts and, you know, I do this work to look at my part, these kinds of misnomers, and they are misnomers. We do this work because we're spiritually sick and we're blocked, and we're going to see very clearly when we start writing inventory that the same resentments are going to come up over and over again because I have the same fear no matter where I go and who I'm with. And the characters are going to rotate on the stage. You know, my parents, my spouses, employers, I'm going to see some repeating patterns if I do a thorough inventory. It's the nature of the work. And so what happens is, if I get like locked down into the idea that someone else has a part and I have a part, then I'm still blaming the other person for being spiritually sick. I'm still trying to point the finger outside of myself, and therefore I'm blocked by the solution that is inside of myself. So there is no such thing as my part in BBA inventory, because that assumes that others have a part or are at fault. You know, that's just me in my own judgmental framework. That's a false sense of power. So please take that to heart and remember that we're doing this because we want to get well regardless of the other people, places, and things around us. I don't want my life to be determined by other people, places, and things. Do you? I want to live a God-determined life, a God-reliant life. You know, God is powerful enough to lift all objects, move all things, find all solutions. At least that's been my experience. You know, and it sounds like from this book, when I was brought through it, that that is the experience of these 100 men and women as well. And this is, I wanted this, and that's why I do this. So we will approach the inventory process from, in the third column, we do look at the interaction we had with the person we have the resentment with or the institution. And in later in the fourth column, we'll look at our own. But remember, this is all about me because I'm the one that wants to get free from food addiction and compulsive eating. And I am not going to hang my recovery hat on anybody else. I'm going to be God reliant, not human reliant, right? So here it says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. And I had to underline this like 5 times. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. Because when I first started writing, I would finish and I'd be like tossing the paper aside and moving on to the next one, like trudging a road or trudging a war, you know? And this isn't a war. There is no battle. You know, the war is over. We've already lost. We lost the battle to try to power our way through life. You know, it didn't work. We can easily see why. So we go slowly. We consider carefully what we've written. And the reason we're considering it is because we want it to be a fact-finding and fact-facing mission. And that means it has to be the truth. Now, I want to, before we get off page 65, I just want to remind you that these 7 areas that we look at in the third column, the self-esteem, the pocketbook, ambition, personal relations, sex relation, security, pride, those things that we look at, they're not bad things, right? Like security is not a bad thing. Ambition is not a bad thing. Having money is not a bad thing. You know, sex is not a bad thing. You know, pride is not always a bad thing. We can be proud of our accomplishments. We can be proud of our child making the honor roll. These are the things that I have to get back that I've lost in my disease. These are the things in my disease that I've lost and I need to get back. That's why I'm doing this. That's why we're looking at them. Up until the time that I come to this work, as a food addict, I've always given the power of these things to other people, the people in column 1, instead of to God. I'm either making them God or I'm trying to play God. But in either case, I've always given the power of those things, the power of my security, the power of my pride, how I feel about myself, the power of my ambition, whether or not I go for my dreams, you know, the power of finance. You know, I let money, my ideas of money determine my actions. So here we look at these things and I want to remind you, they're not bad things. These are the things I have to get back or get back into balance. Right. And I really can't bring them into balance on my own. I can't do that. And when I review my step one inventory, I it's very plain for me to see why. What I can do is I can do the fact-finding and fact-facing mission that's described on these pages, and I can unblock the stuff that I have access to, the things I do know about myself, and I can do my footwork in the steps, believing that God will do the rest, trusting the process. The first thing that was apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. Right? To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. And isn't that the truth? As in war, the victor only seemed to win, right? So even when someone's thrown up their hands and been like, fine, you're right, you know, I don't feel a sense of accomplishment. I feel a sense of, you know, yeah, I got what I wanted, but I'm still not happy. Right? Our moments of triumph are short-lived, right? This is, you know, the greatest statement of hope is here. So we see our troubles of our own making, right? And thank God, because that means that I don't have to wait for other people to change in order for me to recover, right? And so I think, you know, one of the important considerations I had was like, after I wrote column 1 and 2, it's like, do I believe that it's apparent that the world and its people are quite wrong? Can I see that that's my frame of mind? You know, some people had 30 inventories, some people had 20, some people had 50. I mean, it doesn't matter the quantity. It's like, can you see that you really believe that you have the material in front of you, right? Can you see that you're stuck and you're pointing the finger outside of yourself and that these characters on the stage are going to continue to rotate, but that the problem is inside of you? Is it plain to you that your troubles are of your own making? So it is plain that a life, which includes deep resentment, leads only to futility and unhappiness. Is it plain to you that your life, as long as it includes these deep resentments in this column 1 and 2, this stack of papers you have before you, can you see that this kind of life leads only to futility and unhappiness as you try to arrange the lights and the scenery and everything else around you? Like, can you see that you're trying to arrange your life around these resentments? To the precise extent that we permit these, do I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the compulsive overeater or food addict, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. That means it'll kill us. We found that it is fatal. And there it is, right? Why is it fatal? For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. Right? Resentment cuts me off from God. So when you look at your stack of papers in front of you, is it any wonder that you're blocked from God? That's why we're going to face and be rid of these things. The insanity of excess food returns, and we overeat or undereat again. And with us, to over or undereat is to die, right? Because I can't stop. I can't control the stop. Remember, in step one, I can't control the stop. Have I gotten removed from step one? Have I forgotten, you know, just in the last few weeks since we finished, have I forgotten I can't control the stop? Have I forgotten why I need to do this? The grouch and the brainstorm are not for me. They're not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal women, but for compulsive eaters, these things are poison, right? Why? Because it just told us in the paragraph, it cuts me off from God. I die spiritually and eventually mentally and physically. But remember the paragraph from the page before, when we sort out spiritually, we sort out mentally and physically. one of the questions that was asked of me on this page was, you know, am I spending all my time thinking about the resentments that I have in front of me? You know, do I spend some portion of time frequently thinking about them? Do I run into obstacles in life where I think, I sure would love to have that or do that, but then there's this, and then the resentment comes out, something with the parent or the employer or the coworker or the sister or the neighbor or the loved one, right? Because even if we just look back to when that resentment was fresh and alive, or the first few days, weeks, or months that followed, or years in some case, can I see that I was spending my hours so selfishly, right? By just like having the, being on the hamster wheel about it. Like, how much time in my life have I actually spent thinking about this resentment? You know, it's not a good use of my life. It's not a good use of my time. It's terribly selfish. I'm bonded to myself when that's going on. We turn back to the list, right? For it held the key to the future. The list I asked you to make on the separate piece of notebook paper last week, this is your key to the future. We were prepared to take a look at it from an entirely different angle, right? So I've written so far down the list to find the key to my future. And did I look at it from an entirely new angle, right? The key, remember, the key is a new perspective. Remember back on 27, if this doesn't ring a bell for you, please go back and read page 27. That's, remember when Father Mike came and spoke on step two, he talked about how in There Is a Solution that we're looking at, well, we see Bill's story and then we see There Is a Solution, and we're really looking at, it's sort of like the story is being told from beginning to end. And then here, when we get into how it works, we're actually in the guts of the story as it was written. And so back on 27, it is that conversation between the doctor and the food addict, where the food addict is kind of like just desperate and says, "Doctor, you know, is there no solution?" And he says, "Oh, you have the mind of a chronic relapser. Like, I just, you know, I've just never seen one single case recover, you know, in my treatment plan, in modern medicine, anything we have to offer." And you remember the, I don't know if you do remember, but the food addict says, I felt like the gates of hell closed with a clang, like the gates of hope closed with a clang on one side and the gates of hell on the other. I mean, he was just like, he just felt complete, like that hopeless feeling, like I will never recover. And he said, "Doctor, is there nothing?" And the doctor said, "Actually, you know, come to think of it, there is." And he said, "Exceptions such as yours have been occurring since early times once in a while," right? So once in a while, food addicts have something called a vital spiritual experience. And he goes on to say, these are a phenomenon. These appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, right? Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding forces, that's thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, right? Attitudes are beliefs, ideas are thoughts, emotions are feelings, right? So thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, which were once guiding forces of the lives of these women, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begins to dominate them, right? And so the question becomes for you, can you adopt a new set of beliefs? That are once, you know, what are the forces that are guiding you in your addiction? And are you willing to adopt that new attitude described at the bottom of 66, that new set of belief that you can't, but God can, and you are willing to let him by doing the writing work of the fourth step, by doing that fearless and searching moral inventory? That's what we're referring to. The key to get from realization to awakening is writing this inventory. Writing this inventory will set you free. It's very important to keep in mind. It's not something that anyone's ever been able to go around or under. You know, it's definitely a going through kind of experience. So it goes on to ask us, we began to see the world and its people really dominated us. You know, and that's what I was referring to a few moments ago. Can I see that there are things that I sometimes want to do or experience, but that ultimately something on these resentment pages will block me? In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. And can we see that we're spiritually dying inside as a result of these resentments, and thus eventually, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, they will lead to a mental and physical death as well. I mean, do I get that my disease is going to kill me? And that's what they're talking about. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? Right? We've tried managing them, right? Remember earlier in the book where we talked about, you know, that we had a false belief that all would be well if only we could manage well. Our life would be great if only we could manage well. We've tried to master them. We couldn't. We could not wish them away any more than the food addict or compulsive eater could wish them away, could wish away the food behaviors, right? Acting out or picking up with food. We haven't been able to wish that away, and we can't wish these away. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And that's where I'm going to stop today. That's the first three columns. I hope that was helpful to you. And of course, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. I believe many of you already have my number and my email. Thank you so much for letting me speak on step four today.